Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Part 9. Hajj Memoirs from the Far East. From the Muslim provinces of southern Thailand, all over Malaysia, to the Sultanate of Brunei, to Mindanao and Manila in the Philippines, to the high-rise HDB flats of Singapore, and through several islands and river or seaports in Indonesia, Hujjaj have their Hajj stories to tell. What do Hujjaj remember about their Hajj? What aspect of this incredible journey, which used to take months in a passage by sea, but now takes hours in a voyage by air, are cherished? How do Southeast Asians organize their experiences in their memories? Are material circumstances remembered as vividly as spiritual obligations? And what do various pilgrims' memories have in common? Perhaps most importantly, how do Southeast Asian Muslims explain the Hajj to others and to themselves in the act of narrating experience? For Muslims worldwide, the Hajj becomes symbolic of one's connection with Islam, and these narratives, these stories, become an intrinsic part in the tapestry of a Hajj's memories. The first thing which most Hujjaj are keen to share is the travel route details, the actual dynamics and mechanics of the journey to Baitullah itself. Most flights from Southeast Asia to the Hijaz are now undertaken by a carefully managed system of national air carriers working together with the Saudi authorities. Flights are sometimes chartered, but they usually fly directly from various Southeast Asian cities directly to Jeddah, carrying a load of passengers on board who are partly or wholly composed of pilgrims. All of this is fairly recent, however. An elderly Malaysian Hajjah with whom I spoke remembered performing her first Hajj by steamer in the 1950s. Her entire family, including herself as a 10-year-old girl, left via Penang docks in 1951. Halfway across the Indian Ocean, two elderly passengers died, and the captain summoned all the pilgrims on deck to pay their respects before the two bodies, covered in canvas, were lowered by ropes into the deep ocean. Pilgrims who have made the journey in more recent years also told of new arrangements. A Thai Haji with whom I spoke informed me that for over a century, Thai pilgrims have usually made their way down to Malaya or Malaysia in order to attach themselves to the much larger numbers of Muslims going on Hajj from that country. But recently, he said, Malay pilgrims were coming north across the border, some of them illegally, to go with the Thai contingent so that they would not have to wait on the Tabung Haji's long lines. These flights now leave directly from Hat Yai or even Phuket in Thailand's southern provinces. A Filipina princess from Sulu in the southern Philippines told of new gendered arrangements as well. Because of her high status, she led a contingent of 2,000 Filipino Muslims on Hajj several years ago, the only woman heading a delegation from anywhere in the world that year. When the pilgrims arrive in the Holy Lands, they are confronted by the spectacle of all of humanity's colors and cultures all thrown together in one very crowded place. Many, if not most Southeast Asian Hajjis, have never come across people from so many different countries before and are absolutely fascinated by what they see. A Filipino Haji spoke of coming into contact with a young Chinese man who had hiked from the arid provinces of Western China all the way to Pakistan. The journey took him 3 months, and from there he was able to join a Pakistani pilgrim group. When he arrived in Mecca, however, he was officially illegal and was not allowed to join the Chinese delegation. So the Filipino woman and her companions took him in and fed him, as he had not eaten for several days. Join us tomorrow for our final installment in the series, Part 10, as we continue Hajj Memoirs from the Far East. وقد طأطأوا تلك الرؤوس
تواضعا لعزته تعلو الوجوه وتسلم